So tonight we get to deal with one of Course in Miracles' bridge terms again. You know, bridge term, we talk about bridges in Course in Miracles as something in between the two sides. It's not quite spiritual, it's not quite material. It's a way to go from the material to the spiritual, a bridge. So Course in Miracles, you know, itself is a bridge. You know, the whole book is a way to go from your material thinking to spiritual thinking. So this term, magic.
Oh.
It's a clever, clever term that Jesus uses. Because it's got some sexiness to it, doesn't it? Something's magic. It's kind of in there with mystery. It's kind of in there with special. It's magic. It's kind of in there with miracle. Miracle's kind of sexy. But when you learn about what a miracle really is, it's not so fantastic after all. Well, you know, this is great. So magic is this word that might draw you in. And in itself, just the word magic, it holds up at once an experience and a trick. Magic. It also holds up maybe a shortcut. You're getting something that is not supposed to be there. Magic. You're getting something quick. Sometimes it's magic. Magic. And most of all, you're getting something special. Because it would not be magical if it was ordinary. It would just be expected. It's normal. So what we're going to look at tonight is some of the tricks and traps and the leverage that we can get out of starting to see where magic is in our world as Course in Miracles students. Can we identify some of the things that go that we think are standard, we accept, but together we could understand that they're actually the ego working its magic, interpreting things and trusting in things that are magic. So we'll learn what Course in Miracles means by magic tonight together. But for our meditation, you got a question?
I was just going to say, when I was reading the chapter, it seemed to me magic was just all our thoughts that our small mind has.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I wondered, because I kept reading and said, what is magic? And then I thought, well, it must be all those thoughts that my small mind has.
Yep, okay. Indeed.
I wondered.
Indeed, it really is. In fact, any thought that your small mind has is essentially a fantasy or a dream. It's magical.
Yeah.
It's making something that doesn't actually exist. Keyword making. It's making something that doesn't actually exist.
Right.
But then that's what we follow. That's what we're following, is a thought that we're choosing to believe. And then because we decide, we accept that it's trustworthy, it becomes real for us.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts slowly by surely, one by one, begins to pave over the present moment in our beliefs in what we shall exercise together to understand what magic thoughts are. One by one, they make the world. They make the whole world. And you start to make layers and layers of these magic thoughts. They're all the thoughts, you're right, of your little mind. They make a whole world. They also make what the Course in Miracles calls a veil between you and truth. As I've said many times, the whole problem, the whole reason we need A Course in Miracles at all is because you believe something with your heart and your mind thoroughly. You believe it. You know something, in fact. It's more than belief for you. You know something with your very being that's not true. And it just keeps, because of your belief in the something that's not true, we believe in things, we invest in things, as the Course tells us in the workbook, that we think will make us safe. So we've come about and built a whole world, a place where we can exist and be safe and have an identity, have a good time, to even love. With a small L, it turns out, but we built a whole world with these thoughts, layers and layers of it, blocking us from true love. And we're doing it by actually buying into the dream, going to the level of we would say we know with proof that I'm here, that I am. My name is Andrew. My social security number is this much. My address is that much. I'm this high. And the proof seems to prove itself again and again. Of Course in Miracles says, you know, from my perspective, says Jesus, it's magic. I get it. I know you see what you see. I get it. I totally get it. But Jesus says from where he's standing, it's magic. And it will continue to perform to you like magic, which means that it's not real. It has an appearance, but not a reality. It cannot be trusted. And only under just the right circumstances can you see it at all. And you know that's true because of all the things in this world and your own lives that were supposed to be there forever and they're not. You know what I'm saying is true. So, let's take a few minutes and let's search throughout our mind in our lives. And just to get some traction on this so that we can own this idea, let's pick something in our lives that we trust, that we know, that we believe, or that we do, that we think will keep us, I don't know, safe or happy or keep your self-esteem high, but that the Course in Miracles would call magic. Let's just root a few of those things out. You know, there's only 9 of us here. Let's root out something in your life. It's a belief, or it's an item, or it's a relationship that you count on to make you happy, make you safe, make you give your self-esteem high, make you feel purposeful, worthwhile, or that makes you afraid and you can't shake it because it keeps threatening you. Same, right? A thought that you believe, that you see, you perceive, it really doesn't matter what it is, does it? But because this is you, and this is your personal time, and I'm inviting you to do this meditation, dig in, call your ego. We'll search your mind for the next 5 or 10 minutes or so. And find something that you catch yourself holding on to in your life, something that's kind of dear to you. It can be positive or negative. It doesn't matter. Let's just sort through and see what the Holy Spirit holds up for you to look at and perhaps share with the group. Welcome to A Course in Miracles, where we will look at the ego's ways, catch it, see it as the clown that it is, the magician that it is, and after these thoughts that will soon follow, if you work this, if you find something that you've been holding dear, that you know is an artifice, it is made up, if you can catch yourself tonight will help you one more step in the undoing of the ego. Let's find something in your life. Find something that we can shift your perception on. Something you've been holding dear. Something goes right to your core. That you count on or you run from in this world. We have a little bit of time to think through this, so no rush. So maybe you might start with just exploring some thought that you tend to come up in your life that's horrible, that it threatens you, it threatens your peace. Maybe other people aren't so concerned, but you are. We'll do positive in a minute, but just try the negative one out, just to kind of give yourself a coin with two sides. What's something you're afraid of? And now, let's flip the coin over and find something in your life that you pretty much rely on and you can count on that makes life worth living. Something in the world that, you know what, that's really good. Now I encourage you to look back for just a brief moment on the negative one and decide which one is more powerful in your life. Which one is more consistent in your life? This kind of contrast can be a real teaching tool. You can say pass if you want.
Hey, Andrew, I missed the first part. Would you just annotate it for me?
Yeah, the topic is magic.
Uh-huh.
And the meditation is for you to pick a positive thing you believe in the world that you can kind of count on, makes you happy, and also pick a negative thing that seems to threaten you. It seems to just hang on. Something you're worried about and something you celebrate in the world.
Thanks.
You're welcome. So, Emily, you want to share with us? Why don't we do both if you want? There's so few of us. Give us your negative and give us your positive. These magic thoughts in the world.
When I was thinking about the negative, what came up for me was when I'm feeling an obstacle blocking my way, and it appears to be unmovable. I'm trying to go forward with this and block, 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 block. But that's not as consistent my experience as serenity. And I love that, or I'm attached to, I feel good and hold on, or what's the word I'm looking for? It's worthwhile to feel serenity.
You do have a foundation in your life, and your serenity has become a known choice, a place where you can go with your mind, yes? Even with these blocks.
It's serenity. Harder.
Huh?
It's harder with the blocks.
It's harder than going straight to the block and panicking and worrying and working with the block. The block comes easier, or serenity comes easier?
Serenity comes easier. The block just makes serenity a little bit of I have to work harder. It appears, but in reality, the serenity comes as a gift. It's not something I ever did to get it.
Aha.
Like I had to make an effort in the end. It was just like, oh, yeah. Here it is. Oh, it was here all along. Oh, that's what it kind of ends up being.
Yes.
But when I'm in the block state, I feel like everything's against me. I'm never going to get back to that serenity.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. All a matter of thinking. When you're not thinking about the block, serenity shows up.
Mm-hmm.
and somehow with serenity perfectly available, the block enters your life, the world somehow does something, phone call, letter, a date, time comes by and forces you to think about the block, something like that. And then there's no room for serenity. The two don't seem to coincide much, huh? Yeah. Two-sided coin. Yeah. Sundari, tell us about something in the world that you're hanging on to and something in the world that you just frees you. You love it.
I probably have too much here. Well, on the end positive ones, it was things I can count on, you said. I matter. I catalyze people. I find and search the best for the best in things.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that I liked the best was that I see light. I can see light always. I see light always. Mm-hmm. Just like a scintillating matrix that everything and everyone is made of. And so that's cool. And that's like a way out of whatever's happening.
Ah.
And then on the other side, I was fascinated even before I got to this meeting, not on obvious idols that are magic, not on money and, you know, a love partner, and but more subtle, like the magic that I hold. And like, there's a knife edge in me where I'm believing both sides that seem kind of contradictory, but I can't quite feel that place. For instance, I believe in affirmations. I believe in the magic that affirmations can touch the world.
That's a good one, Sundari.
I know that this is a dream, that there's no origin, and that the script is written, which would mean my affirmations wouldn't affect the world. And, you know, it's like this subtle, like, knife edge of my really believing both sides.
That's great. It's a great example. That's got them both mixed right in there. If you don't do the affirmation, and you missed your opportunity before the event, well, that's why it failed, because you didn't do the affirmation. If you do the affirmation and it works out, does that prove you need to do the affirmations every time?
It isn't quite like that, though. It's
okay.
Directing my happiness. It's more, because my degree of freedom, I feel like the only degree of freedom I have,
yes,
is how I choose to interpret and experience what's happening.
Great, great. Like so it's a translation with the affirmation into the positive, like a mantra is. The affirmations are self-fulfilling in the moment.
Right, and they help direct, they help lighten me, they help me pick a more serene, you were talking about serenity, Emily. You know,
yes.
They help me pick the more that path. And then I think exercise is going to have some effect on my body, or that what I eat has any relationship to the size I am.
Mm-hmm.
And that I can affect the world by blessing it,
mm-hmm.
by doing planetary healing.
Yeah.
And then the big thing for me is relationship. And I realized that, you know, like an ongoing relationship, I might say would make me happy, but it isn't really that. It would release my being attached. It would release an attachment to the future. Like, I remember when I got married, the biggest difference was I stopped thinking about getting married. And I had so much energy thinking about, when am I going to get married? So there is something that seems of value to
That's
me.
That's perfect, because that works like a program, the magic thought program, and you ran it and you got what you wanted. Yeah, good, good. Very, very addictive. Very addictive. Luann, tell us something about a positive thing in the world, and then something in the world you just can't seem to shake. Oops, you're muted. You have to unmute yourself.
I'm going to talk about the negative first, if that's okay.
You bet.
My brother brought it up for me today when he called me. He says, I'm really worried about Susan. Susan's my daughter.
Okay.
And he was talking about how her memory is failing. Mm-hmm. So he's afraid she's going to have, she's into dementia or something. And she's 54, so it's pretty young for that. And that really upset me because my fear, he lives with my daughter, and a lot of times she likes having him there on one hand, and she's a very loving person. But on the other hand, he drives her insane because he says he'll do something and he doesn't do it. So I've been all, and he plans on living with us when I retire and she retires.
But what happened with you? What happened with you that was negative when you heard that?
What happened with me, which is what I'm getting to, of course, sure, is that I started thinking he could affect her life and my life in a negative way by having these ideas about how things are going to go.
And that he would somehow program in either worry or, you know, not dementia itself, it is or it isn't, but the worry about it could be programmed in by what he says.
Exactly.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
And then, you know, I have to shake that off because I don't really believe it, but it's still, I guess I believe it on some level.
You're afraid of it.
Yeah, I'm afraid of it.
Very good, very good. What's something positive?
The thing that I rely on in life, basically, I know it's not enough as far as the Course in Miracles is concerned, but the thing that I rely on is my belief that if I can look deep enough into another person, I can see the love that they have. That's kind of like the love that I have down deep when I can reach it once in a while. And if I could, and when I see somebody that has, like my brother, that has ideas that drive me insane, I have to dig deep after he's said something, but I know it's still there in him. And I know it's still there. For instance, I tell people, you know, you don't have to like Trump. He's still a person. Mm-hmm. Somewhere deep inside of him is his self as a creation of God.
And you know that you can do this. Like Emily knows, the serenity is always waiting and nobody can actually take that away.
Right. And I know if I can dig deep enough, I can find that in everybody.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Good, 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 good. Jacqueline, tell us something negative and something positive that you believe.
When you talked about negative, the thing that came right away I could see was I have anxiety. I'm always vigilant when I'm out and about because I had an assault, a really violent assault, I don't know, 20-some years ago. I feel like I've done a forgiveness on it. I don't feel like I have anything left there. But I noticed when I went inside, I still have the vigilance when I'm out in the world of watching, you know. And you do have that after that, but I didn't realize how much I still had it. So, and that means fear. I had fear behind the vigilance. So I noticed that. That's the negative. And I actually, while we did our meditation, I did the little prayer for Holy Spirit to take that and judge it, etc.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking more of magic thoughts as opposed to positive. I would say positive for me is trust. But in my looking inside, I was inward, and I've been thinking about this lately. You know, I'd studied those manifestation principles, and I was just the greatest manifester. I mean, especially when I was younger, I'd just think things, and they would happen. And now I understand that, of course, we're making our world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when we think, when I think of things, they will come to me because I'm making my world all the time. So.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of an interesting understanding, and I haven't been as attached to it now that I'm older. I'm kind of letting go of that. But I did, you know, I was to move to Mexico to James Twyman's community in April, and I was all ready to go. And that was a prayer that I'd had for a lot of years to retire in a spiritual community. And, so, and that came to a screeching halt with COVID-19 because I was supposed to fly out April 7th.
Uh-huh.
So that was a magic thought. I had this prayer. Well, I'd really like to retire in a spiritual community. I didn't imagine it would be in Mexico, but
And I went there and visited and, you know, invested in the casita and all of that that was being built. So, and I'm happy to be here in Santa Cruz. So anyway, I was just thinking of that, the whole manifestation. That's magical.
The whole story. That's great, because there's a whole story that's been put together over time.
Yes.
There's probably actually a deposit put in place and, you know, a whole story that starts to become who was talking about the future? Sundari. Where the future is going to happen, if A, then B. There's a magic thought.
Well, yes, if I had a prayer, yes. Right? But that's still part of the small mind thinking, I guess, even though prayers, you know, can also be holy. So it's something I've really, since I've been, you know, reading more with this, I've really been looking at that. And it's sort of like I feel like, well, why manifest, you know? why spend thoughts on that? So it's an, you know, and but I, the positive for me was the trust that I have and that there is a divine, I am a divine being and
yes,
and the love. So,
wow, yes, and that trust is always just a thought away, just a thought away, no matter how bad things are going. You're just one thought away from experiencing that trust. Very good. Ross, what did you come up with? What's the two sides of your coin?
A couple, 3 years ago, I discovered I had blood clots. And so they put me on Eliquis, magic pill. You know, you really believe that a magic pill or something pumped into your bloodstream, you know, it's big line in the course.
Yeah.
And so, you know, how to resolve that. And then, you know, chapter 2, all material means you accept as remedies for bodily ills are restatements of magic principles. So I know that, and yet after I went in, you know, I told the doctor, hey, it's been 3 months. Let's get off the Eliquis, the blood thinner. And I ended up in the hospital with a pulmonary embolism.
Okay.
So he said, you're on it for life.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So there's my, you know, I know that the course says it's magic, it, you know, but, I don't, you know, maybe someday I'll try to get off again.
No.
Maybe someday.
No.
I know that I don't have to believe in it anymore.
No. Hold on. Stop.
Okay. Help me out.
If you needed to get off Eliquin in order to be spiritual, you will stay in a body. The Eliquin has to do with the bodily level. The blood clots have to do with the bodily level. Anything has to do with Ross's body is a bodily level, and it is not the level of your awakening.
It's irrelevant, is what...
What is it?
It's irrelevant on the spiritual.
It's irrelevant on the spiritual level. Because, of, you know, remember Miracle Principle 12, right? Let's everybody go there for a second. Thanks, Ross. Can we work with this? This is great. Because, you know, it's really great. Personal, and it's real. And I think we can cover some real ground here with this. Go to page 3 and look at this essential and important Miracle Principle 12. Ross, you read that for us when you get there.
3, the meaning of miracles.
You in the manual?
You know, it's the front of the book. It's called chapter 1. The first page of chapter 1 is actually page 3.
And wait, number 3?
Number 12.
Oh, no, excuse me. Miracles are thoughts. Thoughts can represent the lower or bodily level of experience, or the higher or spiritual level of experience. One makes the physical, the other creates the spiritual.
Beautiful, thank you. So when you're dealing with a medical issue, everybody, and everybody's dealing with a medical issue, all of us are old enough that we're all dealing with some kind of medical issue, and there's more coming for us and for our loved ones. So this is great. So, and we'll go to some of those things in chapter 2 where you were where you were reading, because those are really meaty. We'll get there during our session time, but just for now, for the moment. Ross,
so what number was that, Andrew? I'm sorry.
It's number 12, Miracle Principle 12.
Okay, thanks.
So this is where we catch what the Course is describing in those things that you quoted, and that is when we invest in the pills, we use the pills, but they're exactly the same to A Course in Miracles and to Jesus as food. Nowhere in the book does it say stop eating. If you want to be spiritual, Miracle Principle 56 is do not eat, because that's only serving the body and you're not a body. Record scratch. Same for the pills. Same for exercise. And same for the blood thinning medication.
Yeah, I mean, unless you know you're at the level of Jesus and you know you don't need it.
Well, part of your mind is at the level of Jesus, and we're waking that up with A Course in Miracles, but it will not be the part that's invested in the body. But that's exactly what we're working on. That's why I love this example, if you're willing to work with it. You will be taking that medication, but you'll also be taking it with food, because you're going to be more hungry, and the food will kill you if you don't eat it. The lack of food or the lack of medication will both kill you. And to A Course in Miracles, they're exactly the same.
Right. And you could invest incredible amounts of energy into, okay, I'm just going to live on sunlight, and that's going to prove how spiritual I am. Yeah. But it seems hardly worth the effort to go through. You know, I've heard of cases where people live on sunlight, but hardly worth the effort of going through all that training and whatever.
If you did, you would just prove sunlight is a nutrient for the body and that you can stay here in form.
Whatever, you know. Really? You want to go through all that just to prove that you can live on sunlight?
The key here is, in Miracle Principle 12, as Jesus points out early on in the book, he makes a distinction. And boy, does he hit it again and again and again and again as we go along. That what we're talking about is a two-sided coin. One is material. It looks like a body. The other is spiritual, and you can't see it. It's invisible. That makes it simple. We can sort out now. We can sort out now. Where is true love? Where is true patience? Where does true sharing happen? Where does blessing happen? We can sort this out now with this as a guide. But the world and the body will continue to find ways to get your attention and threaten your peace and make you think about material things. Just like food and sleep. It's the same level as medication. So unless you plan on stopping eating and becoming a breatharian, is that it? Breatharian?
Yeah, whatever.
you know that? There are people trying to... They just living on air, those nutrients in the air.
Yeah.
You know, if you ever see a breatharian like this, he's on a diet. He's holding his breath. Oh, my God. No. Don't worry about the medication. Take it. Take the food, too. It's exactly the same. And go to sleep when you're tired. It doesn't matter. All that's the body. Has nothing to do with your spiritual awakening whatsoever. You're one thought away. Right while you're taking the pill. While you're taking the pill to improve the body's condition. That's as good a time as any. While you reinforce the body's happiness to leave the body at the material level. While you go on your spiritual journey. Because it's an inside job and actually it's nothing to do with the body at all. So good. We'll work with that a lot. I love it. Thank you, Ross.
Isn't
did you want to say more, Ross, before we go on?
Oh, I had the flip side of the coin. Joanne had something.
Can I say something just about what's been said so far? The way I look at it is, if there's something going on with my body, I take care of it, but I don't worry about it.
Good.
In other words, I just take care of that and go back to what is spiritual in my life.
Take care of it. Don't make the problem worse.
Yeah.
By identifying with it.
Yeah.
Okay, what do you got, Ross?
Oh, so the positive, I just have this, like, deep down belief that I'll always have enough money. And there's, I don't make very much money. I don't have a lot of money. I just seem to manage my expenses with my income. And it's like, oh, well, I just do that.
So you practice it enough to just relax on that whole thing. And
well, no, I have to be vigilant.
Okay.
I mean, because I don't make a lot of money. There's not a little extra.
But you don't need a bunch of money, it turns out.
I don't. I don't. And I don't have to think that I don't have enough, because I do have enough.
Very good.
And so it's just this thing. I know it's of the body of the material world, but it's like something I kind of count on.
Well, I want to point out that you don't know where the money's going to come from 5 years from now, probably. But 5 years ago, you didn't know either, and you did. You made it happened. So I like to take that as an example of trust. You have found in you trust that there will be enough money.
Yeah.
Without knowing the specifics.
I was looking for a job when I found this one.
Just like that. And there'll be another one, as needed, when needed. Trust, my friend. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. It's a superpower to trust the invisible, to trust that you are being cared for. The bigger picture is. Yeah, even here. Excellent. Jason, tell us something positive and negative that you believe.
Well, what I realize about my positivity is I sort of never give up, no matter what. And that seems to carry me through. And then the negative is already been discussed, you know. But worry about engaging my new life without chronic pain, so I'm going to be free from that. So I want to live without drama. And, you know, having a high quality of life as I age, that was a concern of mine.
Yes.
So that's a concern, but that's, you know, the thing is, I don't want to engage drama.
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't want to engage drama. Drama keeps showing up. That's the negative side. Positive side is Jason never gives up. Yeah. Just somehow, some way, you come through.
Yeah.
Nice coin. Masako, what can you tell us? You got a positive thing and a negative thing that you believe in your life? Oh, you're muted. You got to unmute yourself.
Thank you, Andrew. Two things I want to say before. One is, I love your background.
Oh.
It's always different, and I love everything. Like last week, you had the waterfall. Oh,
I love waterfalls. I got a ton of those. I try not to overdo it with waterfalls.
Oh, no. I love it. It just made me feel so free and alive. And this one, I just feel so connected to that little snail. You
He's
know,
drinking. He's there. Drinking from a bubble.
Yeah, oh, I love it. Thank you. So the negative part is that I had to hide my vulnerabilities at all costs, okay? Things like that I was ashamed of, or what I considered myself failing. Shame is a big one. And, I put the mask on really fast, so that no one would find out that I'm really weak and
hiding weakness.
Huh?
Yes. You're hiding your weakness. It's a job.
Yes. Yeah. Very tiresome, right? It's exhausting.
Yeah.
And the positive side is that it's funny because it's like the same hand, but it's on the other side. So I think probably the best attributes that I can see in myself is that I'm really courageous. And so when I make up my mind to do something or to accomplish something, when I see vulnerabilities, it doesn't appear like it's a big deal. and I don't feel threatened. I just look at it when I'm in that arena, right, of being courageous. I look at it and I'm thinking, wow, this is fabulous because this is my usual stop and there's an opportunity that I can explode this fence wide open to get to the next stage, get to the next level of my spiritual commitment. So it's a funny thing. I think there was another woman that said something very similar to it. So they both involve vulnerability, but one is in the egoic state and the other one is with the Christ vision. And nothing changes. It's up here.
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you.
You bet. And the more you look at a weakness, the more you, you know, if you look at it and you rehearse it, then you'll continue to believe it's real. If you look at it and look through it and see how it did not limit you last time, you can see that it's a thought in your mind rather than a condition of your being.
Yeah, and nothing changes in my world, right? Nothing, absolutely nothing.
Nothing changes, yeah. Yes, it's not a defense. To worry about your weaknesses does not make you stronger.
Yeah.
Busted. Busted ego. Donna, what can you tell us? Something negative that you believe in, something positive you believe in? And you have to unmute yourself.
I was saying I didn't arrive to the meeting, unfortunately, till 7:30. So,
oh, by the way, everybody, we're going to start the meeting at 7:30 from now on. So, FYI. Go ahead, Donna.
Okay. So next week I wouldn't have been late.
Okay. That's right, next week.
Yeah, so that's good. So I didn't realize until I was trying to think of something negative in the world and think of something positive, because that's how I understood what you were talking about until Jason started talking. Then I realized something you believe in. So that's only been for the last few minutes. So I was, you know, just in the sake of wanting to offer something to it, I know that from, like, last year I was very ill and I didn't know if I was going to make it, you know, in the body, let's say. So I know that I still fall into being afraid of being sick. Like, I think that, you know, I'm believing that I can't, I don't know what I'm exactly believing, but perhaps I'm believing that I'm believing I'm the body, I know that. But the other side of that is that something in me also believes that I can overcome whatever obstacle is there. And that it's not all on my effort, that it's also grace. So I believe in that on the positive side. So the fear sometimes really gets me down when the fear of, like, I don't want to go into all the things I experienced, but it is that whole thing about loss of identity, just completely being what you call an invalid, which means invalid.
Yeah.
And it, you know, I went through all that. I was watching it. I saw it all, but it didn't, you know, and then I got well.
Yeah.
But it, you know, did, so not, I, relieve,
I,
me.
So this is so great. This is, you've been through this. You've been right up at the edge. You probably pictured, yeah, a future of you being an invalid. Maybe you still do. And,
yes,
and you got close enough to it. So this happened in my life too. Yeah. And I was paralyzed. I had 6 skull fractures, and it looked bad for Andrew. And, wow, and the doctor said, I was in bad shape. And so, you know, after a while, you begin to realize with the paralysis that I no longer knew how to move my arms. I mean, legs. It was just weird. I never even thought about moving my arms and legs before. It seemed automatic. And I would spend hours and hours in the hospital bed staring at my fingers trying to make a move, thinking, what, why, you know, look fine. You know, I didn't have bones sticking out or anything. I had fractured my head 6 places. But I want to share with you that after a while, you start to become aware or awake to your new normal. And I didn't give up as much as I gave in and said, well, I guess this is how it's going to be, and I'm going to be moving around in a wheelchair, and, you know, I'll be the best, you know, I'll be going to college in a wheelchair. I was pretty young at the time. I just began to, and the peace began to flow back into my life. When I realized that there was just going to be a new normal, I stopped fighting so much. And then there's somebody else who used to belong to our group for, you know, 10 years straight, Wendy. A lot of you remember Wendy, maybe. And Wendy ended up dealing with a job with paraplegics who were living out this situation, they're MS patients, and it's got worse and worse and worse, and wheelchair bound, and she was a caregiver to try to, you know, keep them moving and clean and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, she spent hours with these people. But she herself had worries in her life about her relationships and keeping her car running and keeping her body going and her checking account so that the checks would flow like everybody else. And she'd go visit these people in a wheelchair who were in a limited life. They're invalids. But Wendy found herself getting therapy from these people who still found a way to smile. Sitting in their wheelchairs. She thought, damn it, if they can do it, I can do it. And of course, she was a light in their life because she'd come in with a big smile on her face. But for me, when I was paralyzed, everything got reframed. If you become an invalid, life would be reframed. It would still be you. It just wouldn't be you doing your gymnastics and cartwheels like you normally do. And the idea that you need your body, a healthy body, is the only way for you to be happy, that would be magic. And it turns out a nightmare, because, spoiler alert, but everybody here, you're going to get sick and eventually die. So if you need your body for happiness, your happiness is coming to an end. So better get the spiritual thing going and start the true happiness now that's independent of the body. That's what we're doing with A Course in Miracles in this spiritual journey.
Yeah.
Thank you, Donna.
Yeah.
Did you want to share with us more?
No, I mean, it's just, it seems kind of paradoxical that I experience myself on a spiritual journey and I just can't quite shake that at all. It all goes down, I can't explain it. I mean, in my case, I thought, you know, I was probably going to die. That's the body. But it just, it wasn't like I even thought I'd have a permanent life in that state. It was more about just disillusion of you know, the world as I knew it. And
yes.
And that was where I really was. So
I see.
It's like a trick. It's like a trick. It seems like it's part of what holds me back, because the very state I was in where, you know, because I was in a hospital too, I had no identity in a way that I, you know, I really experienced kind of what it's like to just watch not having an identity, but it was not a pleasant state.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't. So I don't know how this is going to play into my eventual, because I'm going to say it's eventual, that
yes.
I can release this fear.
Let's have you start tonight. I think tonight would
not
be
a bad idea.
I think tonight might even be better than tomorrow night. Let's have you start tonight. Really.
Yes.
Just for a moment. When we're all done, or now if you want, but when we're all done tonight, you have permission, and actually you have a request from all of us here tonight, that you would choose a moment of stillness and freedom from identity with the body, and find that light in you that's always in you no matter what, because the body's not your truth. You remain as God created you, even with the appearance of a body. Just every once in a while, for a moment, surrender, do nothing, and receive that. That's the whole work. A few moments of that. And then it grows and grows as the light continues to shine and your identity changes. Thank you, Don.
Thank you.
So, Isadora, can you tell us something negative and something positive you believe in?
Yeah, the negative is my story around the lease agreement with my tenant and how what a crappy lease agreement it was and how much I'm getting shorted out monetarily and emotionally and blah, 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 and all the nasty things they say to me and do. And it's an endless story. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
I really get into it. So that's the negative. The positive is that shift in my inner being a couple of years ago has mostly stayed, and I love it. You know, it's, I get up in the morning, I go, oh, goody, what's happening today? You know, so that's positive.
Yes. Okay, beautiful, beautiful. So that shift, he says, what happens with a holy instant is it's the progression in A Course in Miracles. You have first a miracle, which is a change in perception about something going on in your life. You have a change in perception about that that invalidates that as a power over you. Basically, that's what a miracle is. It takes something in the world that seems to have power over you, and it dissolves. The power dissolves by the Holy Spirit having you look at it differently. You shift in perception that actually you've been contributing more of the problem than the thing has been a problem.
I know. Doesn't that suck?
Doesn't it suck? Yeah. Okay, that's just the miracle, though. And then life goes on. You've had a spiritual awakening with the miracle, and the Holy Spirit helped you. Now the work begins, right? Which is forgiveness. The negative thing in your life, you've seen differently with the help of the Holy Spirit in you, the awakening has happened, and yet you still have trouble with it, day after day after day. Well, forgiveness is letting go of the unreal. Forgiveness is letting go of the unreal. Before the miracle, the problem seemed real, and you would not let it go. You'd rehearse it, defend it, sue it, whatever. Now the miracle has occurred, and now it's time to forgive the habitual thoughts that continue to burden your mind. That's forgiveness.
Yeah, I seem to toggle back and forth.
Yes.
Like, 1 minute I'll feel very victimized, the next minute I say, oh my God, they're just calling for love, you know?
And yes, that's natural.
Yeah.
And it's when you're called on for forgiveness, when you go back and forth. There are those people in your life who don't go back and forth. They're just angry all the time. Yeah. Or they're afraid all the time.
Right.
We know these people. These are people who have not yet chosen an awakening, a spiritual path. They're continuing to enjoy the material. It's like staying in a horror movie. It's just going to be horrible. But for those of us who've decided we want joy and we want love and we really believe we can have it, we're turning toward the invisible instead of the visible. And we're finding it. You need a miracle. You need a miracle. Ain't going to happen without a miracle. That's why we're studying A Course in Miracles. You get this shift in your life, and then you start working on letting go of the faults. And the longer you've been dealing with the faults, the more ways you've been rehearsing the faults, perhaps the more time you will take to let all go, all of its aspects. But you can now, because you've had a miracle. Then, as you have had, I know you've worked through some of these things, then you find yourself in a situation where you would normally be reminded, and perhaps painfully, of this thing you're working on, but you are at peace because you have transcended its power in your life. Now you have to come to the holy instant, and this is the completion of your awakening on that. Doesn't mean you might still be able to think of the problems, but they no longer have the teeth in you and will never. Because you've seen them for the falsity and the illusion they are. Beautiful. Good, good. Emily. You're muted.
I'd like to ask you, Andrew, for that those teeth to no longer have a bite, is it up to me to not feel there is anything it owes me? So in other words, this thing that I'm needing to forgive in order to find peace, is there this work for me to do to not need anything from it?
That would be only if you want to be happy.
I do.
Oh, well, then that solves that.
Okay.
Let me explain it to you this way. Happy is he who gives. Mm-hmm. Unhappy is he who expects to receive. Even though in the world materially, he who gives seems to have less materially, he's happy every day. Why? Not because he gives. That's not necessary. Of course, in miracles we learn about, you know, giving. But you see, it's the attachment to receiving something, anything, in the outside world that is the burden. The attachments to receiving, and that would bring your happiness, this is suffering. That's what it means to suffer. And it chases away happiness.
Mm.
So first, find your peace. Find your peace without receiving anything from the outside from anybody. Find that. Own that. Sit with that. It doesn't mean you won't do things in the world that a normal person would do, but it does mean you'll do them with more peace because you will have these teeth pulled out of your skin. Find your wholeness independent of receiving anything from anybody ever again. This is what it means to choose peace.
Can I add to that?
Yes.
Great. I love that. Thank you. So in my experience, when, you know, as I receive, I give. It's extension. And it doesn't always come back to me from the same source that I extend my love to or whatever that gift is.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, I get a little crabby because I'm looking at that specific circumstance or person to give me something.
Yep.
And when it doesn't, I get kind of pissy and resentful. And so in my evolution that and living a life with intention and mindfulness, I realized, oh my God, the give are all over the place. So it's not necessarily from that specific thing or person that I contributed something to or extended my love. They're all over all the time.
Ask Ross. He says, you know what? I could worry about making money, but I've had enough experience, he says, that I just will find a way to make it meet and I'll be fine. If he lost his job that he just told you he's really happy to get tomorrow, he says, you know, I didn't have that job last month, and then I did. I'm going to find a way.
Yeah.
So to have an attachment, thank you, Masako, very good. Catch yourself on having attachment to any one thing. Course in Miracles has some beautiful passages. We don't have time to study them tonight, but they're really beautiful. And that is that when you start to move into this area of trust, the whole universe leans in. It's from a place where it uses the word angels. The universe leans in to take care of your every need. Because now, when you let go of the material, specific material sources, when you let go of those specific ones, then all the rest are open.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's much more peaceful. But it's really important because it'd be harder for you, Emily, to show up to other people in your life, and to yourself, of course, but to other people in your life when you feel like you're owed something from somebody else, you'll be withholding whatever it is you would naturally give, even if it's just your time or your understanding or your peace of mind. You will tend to withhold those things until you feel you're made whole by this outside source. Terrible ego trick. It seems only fair, and the law would support you probably. But you'll be miserable in the meantime. You'd be forcing love away and peace and probably good sleep too. Good. Thank you. Yes, Ross.
Speaking of trust, one of my teachers talked about it as if you get out of the driver's seat of the car and you get into the passenger seat. Put your arms back and you just cruise. And you see other people sitting there trying to drive the car and they're always getting in accidents. But once you learn the trick of, I think what you're saying is trust, you just, in the passenger seat, just kind of going, oh, I wonder where it's going to take me.
All right, that's it, Ross. You're making me go to page 298. Julie, you probably saw this coming. Everybody turn to page 298 in the text. We'll come back here to page 45 and 44 in a minute. But Ross is new to the group, so we have to go over some of our old favorites because he's bringing up some of our favorites. 298 in the text, which happens to be chapter 14, Miley, section 11, the test of truth. This is one of our toolbox items. This is one of the quintessential things that you must learn to do in order for you to get out of your ego habit, trusting the ego, trusting the past. Ross called it getting in the passenger seat and letting the Holy Spirit drive. Well, exactly what it says here. So, Ross, you know, read for us the top of page 298. Just finish up that paragraph all the way, those italics and then the following couple sentences.
I do not know what anything, including this, means, and so I do not know how to respond to it, and I will not use my own past learning as the light to guide me now.
Yes. Well, first of all, two things I
want to say. Hang on a second, Zacco. Okay, go for it. All right. So now, I do not know what anything. I love the way this is all inclusive. Including this, which seems to be important to me, means. Wow. Are you guys who have done the beginning of the workbook, I hope this is starting to ring some bells. Or the first couple things it says is, I don't know what anything means. My mind's preoccupied with past thoughts. I see nothing as it is now. I see a meaningless world because I don't know what it means, and I'm full of past thoughts. A meaningless world engenders fear. He explains everything in those first few lessons. But you can see it's being supported and started here. He says, look, when you're out of sorts, when you're in trouble with your mind, when things are going chaotic and things aren't working out the way you plan, the way you're driving, you say, come to this page and say it out loud, I do not know what anything, fact, right? Really? Anything, including this, which means so much to me, means. And so, I do not know how to respond to it. Since I don't know what it means, how can I know the proper response? And I will not use, I will not use my own past learning as a light to guide me now. I won't use the addiction to past, assumptions? Judgments? Hatred? Fears? Guilt? I won't use my past as a light to guide me now. Boy, he's calling you to come into the present, right? It's brilliant. It's a brilliant way to unhook from the ego's promises. Now, Ross, please continue. Here comes the rest of the discussion.
By this refusal to attempt to teach yourself what you do not know, the guide whom God has given you will speak to you. He will take his rightful place in your awareness the instant you abandon it and offer it to him.
Instant you abandon the steering wheel and offer the driving to the Holy Spirit. This is how you access the Holy Spirit. It's printed right here in black and white. It doesn't say the Holy Spirit will reach across and take the wheel when you're in trouble. It doesn't say that. And elsewhere explains why it doesn't. Why the Holy Spirit isn't so powerful in your life that it'll take the wheel away from you when you're about to misuse it. It explains why that's impossible. You, Creator, you, child of God, you, nothing can take your power. You, on the other hand, could choose to say, wait a minute, I've been dreaming a nightmare. I've been making my life difficult. I really don't know. I don't really know what anything means because I've been thinking I'm a body. I've been stuck in this body dream. I've been pushing away love at every possible opportunity, thinking it makes me safer. Whoops. This is backing off, right? So just how it says here, it says, notice how he says, by this refusal to attempt to teach yourself what you do not know, that's you refusing to counsel yourself from the past, by this refusal, then the guide who God has given you, that's the Holy Spirit, will speak to you. I hope that rings a bell. You step back and let him lead the way. First, you step back. Always. Holy Spirit will never charge in and tell you what to do. The ego does. The ego will charge in and force you to say something. That's how you know when you're not listening. The ego pushes like two hands on your shoulder blades. Pushes you. The Holy Spirit stands there with open arms and says, this way. Very different experience. You obviously know it when you've done it. Anyway, thank you, Ross. That reminds me of that passage. The Holy Spirit will take his rightful place in your awareness. When? The instant you let go of the steering wheel.
Chime in on that, Andrew?
Yeah, please.
I had an experience this week with my morning meditation, the lesson title, The Hush of Heaven Holds My Heart Today. Normally, I love this lesson. I call it an embracing lesson because it just holds you.
Yeah.
But under the stress at work, this lesson says, how quickly do all things fall into place? And this is the day that has been chosen as the time in which I come to understand I need do nothing. And so I'm literally like doing this meditation and I'm actively saying like, no, but not today. Like, it's not possible today. Like, you don't even understand like how many things are falling apart today. Like, that it's just not possible today. And like actively fighting like against what the Holy Spirit, I don't know. And then I just had this moment of I couldn't even though, I mean, tonight's about what you believe or don't believe. I came late or negative and positive beliefs, and I couldn't, even though I know that this is not what I am, I have this belief that this is real. And so I couldn't even get as far as like what I know to be true, that this isn't what I am. But I was able to ask the question, like, but what if everything could just quietly fall into place? Like, what if? And that opened the door. And I just found myself suddenly, like, all the thoughts just like ceased, you know, this like busy mind, they just ceased. And I was just there like in total quietude in my, for the rest of the meditation. It wasn't a blissed out state or anything. It was just like, it's just like quietness came.
And
so, but it's the belief that this is real or that it matters so much can be very, very strong. And
yes,
and I found myself like literally, but I can't do this today. And that's just like so silly.
Ego trick.
Because there's no order of difficulty in miracles.
You have a special day. The ego says, no, this is, the order of difficulty in miracles. Exactly. Ego finally found one stronger than the truth. The dream finally had a chapter, an episode, a day that was stronger than the truth. That was the story you were started to start, the path you started to go down, the step down that you were tempted to take. It's so important. You know, it's lesson 155. You know, this one right here, 298, this one should scrub your mind. You get a situation like Julie was in. You come here to this page. You read what Ross just read out loud. This should be enough to jostle you back into sanity. Even just for a moment is all it takes. But look at one. Look at the real quick lesson 155, Julie. Just wonderful. It's on page 291 in the workbook. Another super practical reminder of what we're doing, where we're going. And this lesson also is where Jesus sort of legitimizes your true identity. It's like him coming and giving you a hug and saying, here's how it really is. And I know you know it. It's so beautiful. Julie, would you read for us that first paragraph? And then you're still muted.
I will step back and let him lead the way. There is a way of living in the world that is not here, although it seems to be. You do not change appearance, though you smile more frequently. Your forehead is serene, your eyes are quiet, and the ones who walk the world as you do recognize their own. Yet those who have not yet perceived the way will recognize you also and believe that you are like them, as you were before.
And so you who choose peace will have peace, like Ross does about money. All of us would do really well to take the Ross seminar on the attitude to money. I don't care how much money you have. Everybody would do really well to be at peace like this man. Really. Right? Wouldn't life be that? Yes, for sure. So Ross is peaceful around money. He goes among his friends. Some of them are still very worried about money. And Ross, they look at his life, and they have more money than he does. And they look at him and say, well, Ross must also be worried. Oh, my God, right? But he isn't. But he looks like he should be. And they believe he is, but he isn't. He's healed. He's healed about money. But he looks like he's worrying or should be to them for sure. And then Ross comes across somebody else who's also healed from money, and they laugh. They laugh and they say, guess how much money I owe or how much money it's going to cost. I'll find it. I don't know where, but I will. I always do. And they'll laugh together. How free they are. How simple it is. Because they recognize each other's freedom. The worried people will see him as worried no matter what he says. No matter what he says. And the free people will see him as free. Naturally. Isn't that beautiful? Well, read for us, Julie, the next paragraph.
The world is an illusion. Those who choose to come to it are seeking for a place where they can be illusions and avoid their own reality. Yet when they find their own reality is even here, then they step back and let it lead the way. What other choice is really theirs to make? To let illusions walk ahead of truth is madness. But to let illusions sink behind the truth and let the truth stand forth as what it is merely sanity.
What other choice is yours to make, Julie? To let illusions walk ahead of the truth? That's madness. But to let illusions sink behind the truth that you know is forever true for you for the rest of your life and your being. To let illusions sink behind the truth that is Julie now, the real Julie.
and let the truth stand forth as what it is. That's merely sanity. You will always settle on sanity. Sooner the better.
Beautiful. Good. Okay.
I think, Julie, it's wonderful that you found it. You realized it while right in the middle of what you were doing. Because a lot of times I don't recognize things until a week later.
Yeah, and you can do something with it. Useful. Judy, you have Jacqueline, go ahead.
Well, I just had a funny thought. Donald Trump is a subject, but I'm trying to call him Donald Trump instead of just Trump. I realized, I consider him sort of insane. I thought, well, I'm insane too. So I just got that I have the same, my mind attached to the reality of this world, and all the things that I do with my mind is really the same insanity that I would label him as having. It was just a funny thought.
Yeah, really? Yeah. Believe me, if it was President Field, we would have plenty of things to say about the way you're running the government. Oh my God, how did she become president? Who let her in there? Judy, you got something for us, positive and negative?
I'm actually going to yield my time. The internet is just, I'm only getting every fifth word.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know whether you can hear me.
I can hear you just fine right now.
Yeah, I'm going to yield my time.
Okay, very well. Julie, you got something for us? Sorry. You good? Okay.
That was it, yeah.
It's beautiful. Thank you. Really good.
Before I mute again,
yeah,
I loved what Julie had to share. That was just wonderful. Thank you.
That's working. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's working it. Good. Miley, what do you got for us?
I'm going to pass today.
Okay, no problem. Great. All right. Now let's go to workbook page 44. That's in the workbook. Manual for Teachers, page 44, back of the book. This is number 17 for Miley. How do God's teachers deal with magic thoughts? Some nice practical wisdom. So, this whole manual for teacher came to Helen because there's so many people, mostly psychologists, who were because she was a psychologist. And they were contacting her and saying, how do I deal with this? How do I deal with that? I got a conundrum in my mind. I think this, but I believe that. These kind of things. So, Emily, would you begin reading for us?
Are we doing workbook for students?
Sorry, this is manual for teachers, page 44.
Okay.
Manual, page 44. Back of the book, only a sliver left. The top of the page, it says manual for teachers. In the very back.
I got it. How do God's teachers deal with magic thoughts? This is a crucial question both for teacher and pupil. If this issue is mishandled, the teacher of God has hurt himself and has also attacked his pupil. This strengthens fear and makes the magic seem quite real to both of them. How to deal with magic thus becomes a major lesson for the teacher of God to master. His first responsibility in this is not to attack it. If a magic thought arouses anger in any form, God's teacher can be sure that he is strengthening his own belief in sin and has condemned himself.
What does sin mean in A Course in Miracles, everybody? Anybody? Everybody's muted.
A mistake.
Making separation.
A mistake. Love.
Separation. Whenever you see that word sin, you don't have to go to your Catholic training like I do. I had Catholic training and sin was this really big thing. No. A Course in Miracles says it's just the idea of separation can be real. Please continue.
He can be sure as well that he has asked for depression, pain, fear, and disaster to come to him.
So therefore, if you feel depression, pain, or fear, this is a clue of where it came from. Please continue.
Let him remember then, it is not this that he would teach. because it is not this that he would learn.
Beautiful. I hope you see the circle. Remember, the most important thing to take away from A Course in Miracles, if there's only one thing you get at all, is the law of love, which is also the law of mind, it's the law of spirit, and it's this: as you give, you receive. Very important to recognize your power, and to recognize your experience comes not to you, but from you. Very important. Metaphysics were spoken in that last sentence. Very good, very good. But let him remember then, it is not this that he would teach, because it's not this that he would learn. Okay. Luann, paragraph 2.
There is, however, a temptation to respond to magic in a way that reinforces it. Nor is this always obvious. It can, in fact, be easily concealed beneath a wish to help. It is this double wish that makes the help of little value and must lead to undesired outcomes. Nor should it be forgotten that the outcome that the results will always come to teacher and to pupil alike. I read that wrong. Nor should it be forgotten the outcome that results will always come to teacher and to pupil alike. How many times has it been emphasized that you give but to yourself?
Yeah.
And where could this be better known, shown, than in the kinds of help the teacher of God gives to those who need his aid? Here is his gift most clearly given him, for he will give only what he has chosen for himself. And this gift is his judgment about the Holy Son of God.
Yes. In the beginning of that paragraph, it says, there is, however, a temptation to respond to magic in a way that reinforces the magic. We want to be compassionate, don't we? And we want to go along to get along. That kind of thing happens. Nor is this always obvious that your response to the world reinforces it. It's not always obvious. It can, in fact, be easily concealed beneath the wish to help. Oh, you with the big heart, you who care so much about somebody, say, who's sick, and you want to show them some earthly compassion, it's okay to do that. In fact, it's normal, appropriate, and quite loving in the level of the world, and I recommend you do. But watch out what's happening to you. If you believe that your compassion over their sickness will make them well, you're worrying about their sickness and praying that it get healed, not that they awaken to their truth. You see, you can actually end up reinforcing the magic for yourself. I mean, that's true. And for them. Slippery slope. Slippery slope. You know, real quick, to hold your finger here, flip to Miracle Principle 10. This is where you don't want to try too hard to be a Course in Miracles student. You don't want to try too hard. You know, the miracle, let the Holy Spirit do the heavy lifting. Don't let your ego get creative and try to force your awakening. Yeah. Miracle Principle 10. The use of miracles shifts in perception, right? As spectacles to induce belief, it's a misunderstanding of their purpose. Jesus is busting you, seeing you say something like, you're not a body. Why do you even think you're sick? Oh, so cruel. Or, there is no time, so why hurry? These are sick thoughts. These are thoughts that are trying way too hard in their like spiritual ego, trying to look like you're free from time or free from the body. You're actually rehearsing it. Yeah, watch it. I'm just saying, watch it. Miracle Principle 10. Yeah, Sundari.
You know, it's really funny. I've been
in a state of confusion the whole meeting, actually.
Oh, really? That sounds good.
Really unusual for me. I haven't ever left my state of confusion. And I'm on this edge where I don't know what's real, where like the world's my projection.
I feel an awakening coming. Anybody else? This is what happens. She's not hanging on to her known ways, and she's allowed herself to find herself in confusion. I love it. Thank you, Sundari. Please tell us more.
Okay, there's two pots of it going on. One is that the world's my projection. The dream doesn't actually exist. Nothing exists. So how can the script be written? And how can I have any effect on the world?
I can help you.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, I totally do. Good.
It's this knife edge that I've lost track of the reality.
Good, good. Because if this world held its tight sway as real for you, and it was, keyword Sundari, if it was linear, if your journey was linear, something is wrong. You have to go into a non-linear thinking from time to time. That's what a miracle will do. Chemistry and the truth that you've been pursuing is all built on a linear progression of discovery. One thing proving another, it's great. It works together like music. When you really understand chemistry, oh my God, right? How pleasing is that? But your spiritual awakening is going to have to take a departure from linear thinking. And I know you're doing that. And I know that's exactly the adventure that you're stumbling on. Is the linear versus the non-linear journey. And I know it's right where you are. It's great. It's so great. Yes.
In terms of the body, okay, in terms of body and illness and all of that thing, my new thing is this book and bio-reprogramming where it's called The Complete Dictionary of All Ailments and Diseases. And one of the diseases is I am right. By the way,
298
is it? It gives the underlying thought pattern, creating blood clots, creating da da da, whatever, and the counter thought to it. And for me, the value in it is whatever I have physically, it takes me out of the victimhood and puts me into. Oh, what's my part? And the body is a communication vehicle.
Can I interrupt you because we only have 5 minutes left? In your, everybody, applies to everybody, when you come into this wonderful honesty that Sundari is sharing with us, and you're like, God, why does it matter? I mean, if none of this is real,
yeah,
why does it matter? I mean, what should I spend any effort anywhere, if none of it's real, I'm just chasing my tail. The script is written, so why don't I just let it play out? It's beautiful. Okay. Quick few words for you. I hope they help. Indeed, everything you see is real. Your body, your house, your children, your car, of course, your friends, me, the computer, everything. Is real, but it's not true. As an example, movies are real. I mean, they got months of money spent on them. They exist. I got copies on my shelf of movies like, you know, Avatar and Titanic. I think they're great. They're real. They're really real movies, okay? I got them. Script, everything's written. But they're not true. They remain real. Just like your life. Sundari remains real. Sundari Dembi remains real. But as you awaken, she's no longer true. And you don't have to take her so seriously. You can just continue to play and call love into this dream. The script is written when you will return to awake. The script is also written on how a tennis game ends or a chess match is completed.
The script is written, but nobody knows exactly how any one game will ever turn out, nor your life. Your life. The script is written in the big picture. That's already done. But how your particular game is going to play out, who knows? You're writing it as you go. I hope those few words help. We thank you for your honesty there and sharing that with us. And it's really, really good to work with. Okay. Let's get back.
Yields are real instead of truth.
Oh, yeah. Well, don't distract me, Jason. Okay, back to page 44 for the last couple of minutes. And let's speed this up a little bit. This is such good stuff. Oh, we got to read paragraph 4, though. This kind of goes along with what Sundari was talking about, too. So, who's up? Jacqueline, would you read for us paragraph 4?
Perhaps it will be helpful to remember that no one can be angry at a fact. It is always an interpretation that gives rise to negative emotions, regardless of their seeming justification, but by what appears as facts. Regardless, too, of the intensity of the anger that is aroused. That's a whole sentence. Regardless, too, of the intensity of the anger that is aroused. It may be merely slight irritation, perhaps too mild to be even clearly recognized. Or it may also take the form of an intense rage, accompanied by thoughts of violence, fantasized, or apparently acted out. It does not matter. All of these reactions are the same. They obscure the truth, and this can never be a matter of degree. Either truth is apparent or it is not. It cannot be partially recognized. Who is unaware of truth must look upon illusions.
Who is unaware of truth must look upon illusions and will. Sentence 1. Beautiful wisdom. Real clue how your mind works here. Perhaps it would be helpful to remember that no one can be angry at a fact. This is why I brought up Sundari's life as real. Her body, what's in her refrigerator. I mean, come on. You tell me, she can hold up a book, right? She'll open to a page, and it's real. In this, at this level, it's absolutely real. She can read us a page of the book. It's very real. Very real. When you see the dream at its level, it has facts in it. The sooner you see the facts, like, and Ross brought up one, his doctor's pointing out the blood clots and saying, the fact is, if you don't take this drug, he tried stopping the drug straight to the hospital. Okay. I get it. I can do the math. As soon as you leave that level at that level and recognize that you are not a body, comma, you are free, the true you, comma, because you remain as God created you, you can do one of the most important instructions in this entire book, and that is to use separation for its one proper use. To separate you from your ego, which means from your body. This is the one use of separation. The big magic trick that's going on here is that thing you see in the mirror that seems to be you. And whatever it's owed, or whatever's supposed to happen, or whatever things get in the way of it having an easy day, these all appear to be trips and traps that only affect the thing in the mirror and its well-being. When you step back and recognize that no matter what's happened throughout your entire life so far, you're still here. The same you, unaffected. You can awaken to a spiritual identity that is independent of the body. This would be to see through the magic. Get back to the truth. And the sooner you do it, the better.
So sorry we had to cut this short. There's so many other great things, but we got to turn it off at some point. Thank you. Thank you for studying Course in Miracles with me.
Thank you, Andrew.
We'll do it again next week.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.